Welcome to the Facilitating Public Deliberations podcast. This podcast is brought to you by the New Democracy Foundation in partnership with Professor Carson, the host, and Nivek Thompson, the producer. This podcast aims to share the why, when, and how of facilitating public deliberations to support the spread of these valuable processes around the world.
As COVID-19 forced the world into physical isolation, some facilitators were mid-project. Having started face-to-face, they were now forced online. This episode is one facilitator's story. Emily Jenke, previously skeptical about deliberation online, began with trepidation. She finished with considerable enthusiasm. Here, Emily generously shares the lessons that she learned. Hello, Emily. I wonder if we could start by having you introduce yourself.
Hi, Carson, and really great to be here. Yes, so I'm Emily Jenke. I share the role of running our little consultancy company, Democracy Co., with my business partner, Emma. And we're both based in South Australia, but work all over the country and run deliberative processes of all types and shapes and sizes.
Great. Thanks, Emily. I really wanted to talk to you because I was aware that you had been blogging about a recent project that I know you started face-to-face and you did 3 days face-to-face before you did this final session. So to some extent, it's only partially answers the questions that are going around in deliberative circles, which is how you do genuine deliberation online. But I still think that what you had to say about the lessons that you derived, at least from that final session, were worthwhile. So let's just put this into context. We're recording this in late April 2020, and the project that you're talking about, you did in March 2020. And just tell us a little bit about that project, what you had done up until the time that you went online and what you had to do online.
Yeah, it was a really interesting, you know, I've been working in this field for most of my career, Carson, and every little project throws up some challenges, but this one was really quite challenging because not only did we have to pivot really quickly from working in one mode to another, we were all going through the whole onslaught of the coronavirus pandemic, which is sweeping the world at the moment. So this was a citizen's jury. It was based in Queensland. It was a 4.5-day jury. We'd done 2.5 days over a couple of weekends. We'd had the first session was a Friday night kind of briefing with the jury and settling into their task and day one of their work. A few weeks later, we'd come back together for a single day for their evidence program for them to hear from a range of witnesses. And that last day was on the 14th of March. And I flew home to, it's a quite interesting and quite an eerie experience. I flew home to Adelaide from Brisbane the next morning after that session on the 14th of March, and the plane was empty, and there's a whole range of new things that had happened at the airport around safety and security, and I just found myself going, something's going to happen here. I don't think this is looking good for the next couple of weeks. And we were due to bring the jury back together 2 weeks after that, and I sort of got back and started talking about the next and final weekend for the jury to come together, and we realised really quickly, I think we realised a lot quicker than our client did, that it wasn't going to be possible, and I'm really pleased we did come to that realisation quickly, because we had to completely pivot the process to run it online, and we had 2 weeks to organise it, and we had 2 weeks to convince the client that we could do it, we had 2 weeks to get the tech ready, we had 2 weeks to get ourselves ready. It was quite a chaotic period of time, but yeah, we just had to respond really quickly to the situation. And one of the options we had that we had talked about putting to our client was that we just pause and we delay. But the jury was in a really critical point of its deliberations. It had all this fresh knowledge and this great, wonderful energy, and it was ready to go. Like, it was just ready to get into the nitty-gritty and deliberate, and they were, you know, full of momentum. And also the client didn't want to stop a process that they'd been planning for 9 months. And yeah, so off we went, and we pivoted really quickly and had to change from a face-to-face process to a completely online process for the last 2 days.
That's really interesting to me. So that crucial work that really we all thought we needed face-to-face to do that deliberative work, was still left over when you had to do that online. How many people were you working with?
Yeah, we had just under 40, so we had 39 jurors. We were actually on that 14th of March, that coronavirus sort of had started to hit Australia, and there were three or four jurors that just said, I've got a cold, I don't want to come, I'm quite vulnerable health-wise. And so we'd lost three or four of them on the 14th, and I was already kind of thinking, okay, well, we'll have to do something to bridge their participation, because I didn't want to lose them, and they didn't want to leave the process. They were really just staying away to help others. And actually in the room on the 14th, we had a juror got a text message from her partner saying, my boss has got coronavirus and I spent all week with him. And, of course, then we had to tell the jury that it was just a chaotic.
Oh, wow.
It was just a dimension of complexity that, well, none of us are used to or know how to deal with. And so we actually spent some time with the jury talking about it, and that sort of happened at about mid-afternoon on the 14th, and they all said, yep, we're going to stay. One of the jurors left at that point because he's a cancer patient, and he left because he was worried.
Vulnerable, yep.
Rightly so. And so we continued on, but already as a jury we were like, oh, this is different. Something's going on here. And thankfully at the end of that day, probably the last 2 hours of that day, the last face-to-face day we were together, we ran a really powerful and important exercise in hindsight. At the time, I sort of didn't realise how important it was and where we'd got to. But as we then started thinking about the next 2 days, we realised that the work that we'd done together had really helped them organise themselves in their thinking, and had gave them a whole heap of data that they could draw on when they went online. So thankfully, we'd done the exercise the way we had, because we were able to understand the recommendations that individuals were wanting to put up. We had been able to ask them a really simple question: did they support it, did they not support it, or were they conflicted? But the most important thing that we did in that exercise is we asked them why they felt that way. So we had a whole range of data under recommendations that said, I really like this recommendation because it achieved blah, 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 or I don't support it because of that reason, or I think we need to talk about X, Y, and Z some more because I can't quite decide where I am. And it was a simple little exercise, but it really, in the reflections that we've been doing, you know, in after the process finished, it really enabled the jury to leap into that deliberative work, because they had a really good structure to start talking about.
Well, they had actually started deliberating at that point. You know, as soon as they started having to give reasons and with unanswered questions. So that's terrific. You were well positioned then.
Thankfully.
You mentioned that when you went online, you were going across three time zones. Why were you going across three time zones? Because it was Queensland and South Australia, wasn't it?
But yeah, we were working with Chad Fuchs from Victoria as well. He was facilitating for me. And so when we'd initially decided we were going to go online, and we'd realised that as Democracy Co, we'd said to Chad, all right, we'll get you over. You come over here and we'll all be in the room together and we'll run the process. But then the state borders closed. South Australia closed its borders to Victoria, which meant that Chad couldn't come over and we couldn't go to him either. So we were, and the jury were in Brisbane, we were in Adelaide, Chad was in Geelong, and we were operating in three time zones. That was another little dimension of craziness that I have reflected on since. And I said to the team, we needed to set our clocks to Queensland time and just stick with that for the process.
And I suppose for global listeners, we're not talking about huge time difference, but it is still disruptive, isn't it?
Yeah, three different half hour, you know, there was a sort of an hour between both, but three different time zones. And so you'd go to lunch and you'd be like, right, what time do we come back? And we're all flummaging around trying to get the time. Anyway, so that was a little bit, but yeah.
I understand. So when you were doing the design for this last session, you obviously had to make choices about what kind of platforms, what kind of IT to use. You didn't have any constraints imposed by the client. You were given free rein, were you?
Yeah, not at all. In fact, we said to them, we will tell you what we're going to use. And, you know, for the client, they were bringing jurors in from all over. It's always a cost issue, right, for the client to change the things you're doing. They, in the face-to-face sort of model of the jury, they were bringing people from all over Queensland. So they were flying in, some jurors were travelling really vast distances to get into Brisbane, taking them a day to get there and a day to get home, and then 2 days of jury time together, and some quite large, significant travel and accommodation costs that the client had. And they realised really quickly that they didn't have to bear those costs anymore. And we were like, we'll try not to spend any more money than what you've already, you know, what you would otherwise be budgeting for. But basically, yeah, we said to them, look, we had to make some really quick decisions. And I think probably the most powerful decision that we made, Carson, which I'm not sure if it worked for this jury, and if we were doing a full jury online, I'm not sure I would take this decision, but we wanted to replicate the face-to-face experience as much as possible. So some of the constraints.
I think we're all there. I think we're all kind of thinking, okay, we'll just.
Yeah.
The notorious French example of the climate change assembly that just had these incredibly long days of 7 hours, you know, trying to replicate the face-to-face. And so did you find that you instinctively fell into that trap, but you've now realised in future should be segmented, or is that what you're saying?
Oh, I think yes, that's one of the things. But what we said is that there's enough change. What we sort of decided is that there was enough change around for all of us. And if we could just see each other, talk to each other, and get to keep working together with as little new skills to learn, so new tech to learn and new tools to learn, trying to keep it really simple for the jurors and also trying to keep it simple for us because we'd never done it before and we didn't know what was ahead of us. But one of the constraints we had, which I definitely would have changed, was that we had those 2 days booked in everyone's diaries, the Saturday and Sunday, and we toyed with the idea of only having half days and tacking on another day here and there. And so we actually put it to the jury and said to them, look, we'd actually like your input in this. Do you want to keep going and have 2 full days together, or would you prefer it if we push back at the client and we gave you an extra half a day? And they said, nah, it's in our diaries. We'd love the distraction. Let's do it. And all of them basically just said, yep, let's go. And we had a full house for the final weekend.
That's fantastic. So you got them all back. If you did have the flexibility to do that differently, what would be your ideal? I mean, what kind of blocks of time are you thinking work really well?
Yeah, I think 4 hours, you know, sort of immediately go to half a day. And I think 4 hours is probably not enough because you're just getting going. One of the approaches that we did have, we had a little bit of flexibility in our program, and we said to them on Saturday afternoon at about 2 o'clock, we said, look, we could either end here or we could put in another 2 or 3 hours now to keep going. And they said, yep, let's keep going. We're on a roll. And so, if they weren't on a roll or if they were feeling really tired at that point, we probably would have stopped. So I would say, especially for deliberating where you need time for people to talk together, and of course, everything online takes a little bit longer than it does face to face. I think a 5 or 6 hour block is probably reasonable, but you just need to check in with the group and see how they're tracking.
So it might be a 5 or 6 hour block, but with that flexibility to curtail it if they're starting to flag or they're going into a mode that it's just too exhausting or confusing. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and we had one of the things that we did do was they actually had a really tricky thing that they wanted to talk about, and they said, look, we don't have the energy for that, but let's get rid of these other little things and then we'll save the tricky thing until tomorrow when we're fresh. So, and that worked really well too.
Yeah, that's nice. So you're leaving a lot of the timing decisions up to them, which is great. I just wanted to say before we left that point that you were making earlier about they were flying people in from all over the state and the cost and everything, that I guess we shouldn't lose the fact, I notice it's not amongst one of your 7 lessons, I don't think, that that's a huge advantage, isn't it, that you are able to beam in people who are otherwise in remote locations. And in Australia, that travel stuff can be tedious for people and, a lot of cost associated with domestic travel here.
Yeah, it was, and it was a real kicker. And I think the client came out on top budget-wise. In fact, what we recommended is that the jury were paid a little bit extra on their honorarium. So I think they were originally going to get $400 and that went up to $500. And the client was like, yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a big impost of their time. It's a bit stressful. We've got the money. We'll give them that. We did have a few jurors that didn't have great internet service. They lived regionally. And we came up with a really clever little solution for those. And we put them into local hotels just for the weekend. Oh. So there were a couple of jurors they spent the weekend in a local hotel where there was Wi-Fi and they didn't have any distractions and they really enjoyed that. So it was still a little bit of an outing for them, but
that's physical distance. Very good. So let's go through those seven lessons that you documented, shall we? And the first one is that you're saying that it's frantic, and by that it's just busy, is it? Or exhausting for you as facilitator? Or flesh that out a little bit for me.
Yeah, it was quite interesting because I'm normally, after spending a couple of days with a jury, I'm really energized. Like they just fill my cup. People just really fill my cup. I do get tired, but I just get really sort of energetic. And at the end of that weekend, we were just in the corner, collapsed. and I think it's because we were not only holding the room and the deliberation and all of those normal things that you do as a facilitator in a deliberative process, but we were also holding this huge weight of, can everyone hear us? Is everyone okay? Someone looks like they're frowning. We actually had one of the jurors who was struggling a bit with the process and he was coming in and out and, you know, he'd just leave and then he'd come back half an hour later. And so there was all these other things that you normally don't need to worry about so much that we were just trying to juggle and hold. And to give you a sense, Carson, normally in a process like this, we'd have two facilitators in the room for about 40, 50 people, and we had four facilitators and a tech person. I was thinking, we don't need everyone. And on that last day, everyone was just running because we were physical distancing too. We were actually in an office space and we couldn't be together as facilitators in the same room. And so we were running between rooms and we had WhatsApp going in the background, communicating with each other. Our IT guy was dumping people. We actually had a brilliant little idea for me. I had a big Corfloop board with every juror's name on a post-it note. And every time we put a group together, it was like a war room, you know, moving soldiers around on the board. we were moving them around on the board, so I knew where everyone was and what they were talking about. And because at that point, you know, some things they were talking about were quite easy, just no-brainers, let's just write it out. But other things were really complicated. And so we were trying to support them and go in and out of those breakout rooms that they were in virtually and just knowing where everyone was at the time. It was a good way to do things. But
that's fantastic. Yeah. I think that's really good advice. That particular lesson seems to dovetail with another of your lessons, which was that it's easier to control. But I guess it's only easier to control with that caveat that it's frantic. But what did you mean by the easier to control?
Oh, I suppose, you know, it's always a difficult challenge especially with time and being able to start a process. But I'm a really big one for, I explain the task once and then everyone goes. And someone in one of your peers, one of the jurors, will be able to explain it to you if you haven't understood what I said.
Right.
So we'd explain the task and we took our time and whatever. And then we just click the button and they all disappeared into these little breakout rooms. And we sort of would sit in the main room together, all the facilitators, and go, oh, phew, they've all gone, you know, like, right, we'll go, you go here and you go there. And so we'd pop back in and they'd just got on with it. Like they just had organized themselves. They'd sat down together in their little group and they'd just got to work. So we were more able to sort of control those I suppose, the bracket, the movements, sort of moving the group yeah. around. I didn't have people outside smoking and have to go find them. And
yeah.
All that
yeah.
stuff. It was just a little bit more controlled. But that being said, there was a whole other element of chaos, you know, which is just like, how are they going and how can we help them? And yeah.
And I think we should explain so that when you say they went into small groups, you were using Zoom breakout rooms
yes.
for you.
Yes.
Is that what you're doing? Hmm.
Yeah, yeah, and okay. they were really great because the other thing that we could do with those breakout rooms on the screen, you know, a group was breaking into a breakout room to talk about a particular topic. We could name that group. We could name that room by the
right.
topic.
Yeah.
And so they knew what they were talking about. The other thing you can do and we could do is we could put them in groups that we decided mm-hmm. or we could just automatically do it and Zoom does it for you. And so we did that a lot. We just like, go Zoom, you do the thinking for us. Like it's a really random way of splitting up the group. As they got deeper into their writing, they chose where they wanted to be, which was what we would normally do in face-to-face. But at the start, we could just flick a switch and off they go.
I guess there's an impediment. They can't move around, can they? That is, you know, they once they're in a group, well, they're in that group. They can't, if you're in a room, they can stand up.
Yeah, we said to them they could, and so they just put their hand up. They can call for help or they come back into the main plenary and go, look, I'm just not getting along with those people. I'm not being heard. And I would say, do you want me to come with you? I can come with you and we can sort it out. Sometimes I did that. Sometimes they just went, nah, put me somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you put them. So there's still a lot of choice, which was really good.
Okay, great. Mm. Good to hear.
Yeah.
Let's look at some of your other lessons. You're saying that it improves transparency. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, we probably didn't test this as much as we could, but a couple of things. So we could have live streamed the whole jury process.
Oh, right. Okay.
Which we didn't because we knew we were having a first go and we were terrified.
Enough, yeah.
That was enough. But all of the conversations were recorded. So there's a brilliant recording of the logic and the transcripts of all the groups. And that just automatically happened in the background with Zoom.
Yeah.
The other thing for jurors was that when they were in these small groups, so probably worthwhile saying what they were doing in these, they weren't just talking, they were starting to write their report. And we use Google Docs. And
yeah. Which you would use anyway in a face-to-face yep. environment, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So in a face-to-face environment, we had 10 laptops booked to have in the space and yeah. they would be working on that Google Doc together in different groups. But and so that was what was happening on Zoom. But what we did is we had in the group, we said the first thing you need to do is nominate a scribe. And then so we'd go in and say, have you got a scribe? And they'd say, yep, Sarah's our scribe. We would drop Sarah the link to the Google Doc in the chat. She'd open mm-hmm. it up and share her screen with that group. And so they were able to see, more so than four or five of them sitting around a laptop, they were all able to see what was
yeah.
being written. It was actually far superior in that than it would be in the room in that regard.
Another one of your lessons was that collaborative mm. writing is easier, and I hear what you say about that. That's
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
You mentioned that as one of your lessons that being prepared is critical, and I think you've covered that just in terms of how you organised all of this. I love your war room analogy. was there anything else that kind of surprised you or you did differently that might be useful for other facilities?
Yeah, the other thing about being prepared, what we did for them is we said, and we're quite we probably overthink some things sometimes, I'm sure we do, and overplan, but we said we reckon they need a one-stop shop for everything that's going to happen on the weekend. And so we wrote them, I think it was a 10 or 11 page briefing paper, which sounds frightening, but it had a whole heap of things in it. And it's, you know, it had a little one page on the top front page that said, if you've got any problems, ring Tim. If you, this is what you need downloaded and this is how to do it. And it was really designed at probably the least IT savvy juror that we might have in the room.
Right.
And that document, we sent that out, I think, on the Monday, and we met on the Saturday. by the Wednesday, we'd had one person ask for help. Everyone else.
Oh, wow. Well done.
Great. We're all set up. We also got them to download a bit of a help desk. It's a help desk app, which allowed our IT guy to remotely take over control of their computers if they had problems. Tim was able to go in there and go and fix Annette's problem and get her straight back online as she was having issues. And so that's sort of thinking through what might be some things that we encounter and how we're going to overcome them. We put that all together in a briefing pack, and, you know, I would never do another online process without that.
That's terrific. Well anticipated. That also comes to that other lesson that you mentioned, which was IT support. Is there anything more you'd want to say about that? It sounds like both that document and also the help desk app is what you were talking about with the IT support, or is there something else that you would?
Well, we had a person, and yeah, we had a person. We had our guy that does a lot of work for us, and I actually, Carson, and originally was like, no, we'll be right. We'll be fine. We don't need Tim. And Emma, my business partner, is like, no, Tim's coming. And Tim was brilliant because there were those things that happened, and we were just able, you know, I'd WhatsApp Tim and I'd say, Tim, can you go and help Chris? He can't get back in. And so Tim, we had all their phone numbers in our war room. So Tim would go ring Chris and he'd work through his issue. And there was just someone that could do that.
Terrific.
While we were continuing on with the process.
And the only other lesson we haven't talked about is that it isn't social.
Mm.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? That sense that people have when they're enjoying coffee together or having a smoker or out in the corridor. Mm. Did you think about, or would you think about in the future, something that has come up with a few people that I talk to is the idea of introducing in maybe breaks during which people are playing games, or one person told me about during the break they play music and you can go off and have a bit of a dance with yourself or whatever.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Have you thought about ways in which you could, that's more about individual fun, but have you thought through how you might be able to create that strongest sense of the social in such an artificial environment?
Yeah, well, we kind of tried it, and we didn't put this in the blog. I probably should go back and add it. But on the, because I was really worried, I was sort of worried about that. And on the Friday night, and it was partly driven by everyone getting prepared for the technology, but we had Friday night drinks session on Zoom.
Oh, nice.
And yeah. It just enabled the jurors to come in and have a drink. And no joke, they all had a glass of wine and they'd all come in, you know, and I think we got 28 of them or something out of 39 or something came in on Friday night, and they just played around. And so, and I said, all right, well, let's practice the breakout rooms. I'm going to send you off to a breakout room, go have a catch up, and send them off to a breakout room for 10 minutes. They had a drink with their friend, you know, with whoever they were with.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, but I reckon I'd build in a no screen time. I'd say go off, go for a walk, go around the block, go clear your head, go play with the kids. Because I think when they were turning off the screen, they weren't just resting. They were giving their partner a break who'd been looking after the kids. They were making dinner, you know, feeding them. So because they were in their homes, life was still going on around them. So they, so I think it's a really good point. And it's one of the things that I'm really excited to play with some more. But they all asked each other for their phone numbers.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So they were talking to each other anyway. Yeah.
It's beautiful that you're feeling so enthusiastic about this despite the frantic nature of your first attempt. What we didn't talk about was you mentioned that you used Poll Everywhere, I think, in your blog. Were you putting it to some kind of vote some stage, or because we know with deliberation it's good to delay that as long as possible, but there always does come a time, doesn't there, where we do need to see what kind of agreement we've got.
And it's actually something that I'm going to talk to you about later, Carson, but the one thing that we couldn't work out how to do was sociometry. So how do we do that in a virtual space? And because we use that tool a lot, and for people that are listening that don't know what that is, it's where you know, you ask a question and you're in a standing space and you ask a question and say, if you agree, go over to that side of the room. if you don't go to that side, and let's talk about why. Mm. You know, that kind of tool in a face-to-face environment is really great at taking the temperature of the room and kicking the deliberation along.
Without reducing it to numbers. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. But, you know, it's the thing that's still plaguing me. It's the thing that I really want to explore.
Yeah.
So we used a very poor cousin of some polling, and it was very loose polling. And there were two types of polls that we could do. We could do them in Poll Everywhere, which is a standalone platform, or we could do it just on Zoom, and we used both, but we needed to get a sense of where the group was at and what was, and in a quickly way, because the other thing that you can't do very well in a group of 40 people is a plenary discussion.
Mm.
And those two are really important. That's a really...
I wonder if you could use, you know, that technique of, you know, one finger, two fingers, three fingers, depending upon your approval or your comfort with an issue. And then you could put them into rooms with the one fingers, the two fingers, the three fingers.
Yeah.
And let them just see why, and then kind of mix them up with the, anyway, that's just a challenge we'll throw out there for others to consider.
It is, yes. Open to all ideas. That. Yeah. So
I think I might have covered everything I wanted to in relation to this, Emily. We'll certainly link to your website and therefore your blog and so on. Is there anything we haven't covered that you think that has reminded you of, yes, but I forgot to mention whatever?
Yeah, look, I'm really happy if anyone's listening and they want to find out more, they're really happy to share. But the only thing I wanted to just touch on was how jurors found it, because I was, you know, we kind of finished and I went, I wonder how they found that, because they all finished and went, I'm exhausted. And we're still in the process of, we do a big sort of feedback survey for our jurors at the end, and that's still open. But we've probably had 3/4 of them come back and they absolutely loved it. So they loved it. And, you know, I'm curious about this, because a lot of them loved it because they said we could just focus on the task. We could just get and do the things. Some people have said, I loved it because I didn't have to socialise with a whole bunch of strangers.
Whereas others have said it helped those people. Yeah,
and others have said I really missed it. But overwhelmingly, they and we were really, really surprised at it. And I've, you know, I've spent sort of 20 years saying you can only really deliberate when you're in the room and you can feel things of other people. And now I'm just like learning this whole new thing and going, wow, that's really, really surprising. So, you know, we were really surprised, and I think they were too. They were worried about it and they just loved it. They all turned up the next day on time, all stuck. We went over half an hour at the end of the last day as they were handing over their report to the client, and they all stuck with it. And then they all just sat there wanting a chat. Like, we were having a drink at the end of the process and there was a few of them saying, can we stay back and chat? And so,
yeah. Do you
yes.
think this was, I mean, it must have been influenced by the fact that they had spent some time together at the beginning, but it sounds like you are left with the feeling that if you just did a totally online deliberation, it would work just as well. Or do you have any residual doubts about that? Because this wasn't totally online.
No, it wasn't. And it was, you know, in a way it was great because it was a bit of both, which is lovely. And I'm much more confident at the thought of doing a full process online. I think I would design it completely differently, because I'd be wanting to build those social interaction, those play things in, those getting to know you things. You know, I mean, what we did lose is they didn't go and have lunch together and sit together and get each other a cup of tea and whatnot. And I think that sort of social connection is important for a jury. But who says it can't work? I mean,
who says?
We may be in a position where we have to make it work.
I hope you have a chat. I hope you have an opportunity to experiment with it totally online, because it's going to be great for you to be able to confirm or disconfirm what you're thinking now, which is, well, why not? You know, this works just as well. I mean, there are some huge advantages, as we've talked about.
Yeah,
Emily,
I'm
that's
quite
been
excited.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for the time that you've given me. I've really enjoyed hearing about this very specific case study, and keep experimenting. It's great.
Yeah, thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks so much.
Thank
Emily.
you. See ya.
There are some excellent lessons in this episode for anyone embarking on online deliberation for the first time. I learned a lot. One opportunity I noted, and it's for researchers, is that having recorded all those conversations via Zoom, for example, means that in-depth analysis can occur. We'll be covering discourse analysis in a future episode. Several other things that Emily touched on we'll also explore in other episodes. Social interaction and taking the temperature of the room, we'll look more closely at that. And another area we'll explore in detail in a future episode is adult learning, drawing on the experience of a seasoned university educator.
Thanks for listening to the Facilitating Public Deliberations podcast. If you found this content valuable, please subscribe to the podcast, write a review, and share the podcast with your colleagues.